Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be revisiting a conversation that we had some time ago with Renee Ryan. She's had experience as a CEO. She has 25 years of building category, creating healthcare companies, and she led the health technology investments for Johnson & Johnson Innovation in the West Coast and Asia for over 8 years. She has a healthcare investment banking background, and she's got some great insights. Looking forward to revisiting our conversation with Renee. I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of your career story, a little bit of your history?
Sure, I'm happy to. So I came out of college just knowing one thing, that I was a good student. And so I chose a path where I could continue to learn. And so at that time, this was, you know, consulting and investment banking were very logical places to start out in a junior position. I actually went into investment banking as my first career move and went to a boutique investment bank in San Francisco, where they specialized in technology and healthcare. And my first real project I worked on was for a biotechnology company. And I thought, wow, how cool is this? I can learn about science. I can learn about the body. I can learn about, you know, diseases and conditions, and maybe along the way have an impact on a patient at the end of that spectrum. And so I always say the healthcare bug hit me early on and bit me. And I've stayed in the healthcare space ever since. And so I did an arc of my first part of my career was all investment banking. Okay. I was at some small boutique banks, and then Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse. It's much larger investment banks that had a global footprint, and really cut my teeth on strategic work in terms of M&A and advisory work, also financings and IPOs. And so most of it was in product side of healthcare. So healthcare, IT, medical technology, and biotech. And then I thought, you know what? I'm a partner at an investment bank. I'm spending more time worrying about running the firm than I am talking to my clients. Sure. And so an opportunity to go to J&J came up. And it was in a very interesting role. It was a venture investor role within Johnson & Johnson. Actually, Johnson & Johnson Development Corp, which is the venture arm of J&J, is the longest standing corporate venturing group in the world. So they've been around since the dawn of the venture capital industry back in the 70s, and had a tremendous history of investing in, you know, great breakthrough technologies. And so I went to J&J. I was there for a total of 8 years. And the company was just enormous. You know, when I got there was $50 billion of revenue, maybe tracking to 60. And so very hard to make small little investments, you know, catalyze into great big opportunities. And so I began thinking a little bit differently about how do you build a company, and thinking very strategically about how capital is deployed. And so I started forming companies. And so the most notable of the companies I helped form at J&J was Verb Surgical, which was a collaboration between Johnson & Johnson's Ethicon surgical business, Verily, and Google, and really brought together kind of all of the needs for a future state of the, you know, digital surgery, or the OR of the 21st century. The same summer I founded Verb, I also invested in Cala Health. And so I was the first investor into the company in a Series A. I sat on the board since the first board meeting we ever held. And so when we were looking for a new CEO, I raised my hand and said, listen, no one's ever launched a wearable neuromodulation therapy like ours. Uh-huh. And so when I raised my hand to take the company to the commercial level, away from, you know, no longer a development stage, but now a commercial stage company, the board thought it wasn't such a crazy idea. And so here I am.
Ah, that's a great story. And you said being a first-time CEO, I think it's going to be of interest to our listeners, who a lot of them are first-time CEOs or first-time leaders. And we'll love to get your thoughts around that. One of the questions I'd love to ask guests is, knowing what you know now, if you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Renee, what advice would you give her?
You know, I think don't be afraid to try new things. One of the things that I learned in my career, so as an investment banker, a lot of the projects would get assigned to the quote unquote staffer, which is typically a associate or VP level that's overseeing all the junior resources and allocating them to various projects. And what I realized is if a project was coming from the staffer, usually it means that nobody wanted to do it. So my goal was always to get in front of things. And so I always was in a partner's office asking what they were working on, you know, trying to help on companies that I thought were really interesting or projects that I thought were really interesting. And so I got ahead of the curve on a lot of my projects. And so didn't have to get staffed on things directly from the staffer, but instead, you know, made great relationships with the various partners and more senior bankers to get the projects I wanted.
Great.
So maybe that just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to kind of jump ahead in the line a little bit and get what you want.
Got it. Any advice that you received early on that you wish you would have ignored?
Ignored? You know, I think, especially in investment banking, I think there is a focus on the name on the door versus the people you're working with. And I went to a small boutique investment bank and I worked with phenomenal leaders who took me under their wing and taught me. And that to me said more than, and I've worked at, you know, beautiful companies like Goldman Sachs and Johnson & Johnson. But I always went for where I felt I could be my best self and where I could grow. Because in your early days of your career, you're just learning and you're drinking from a fire hose to learn. And so to me, it was more important to have the people support me versus just the name on the door.
So what leadership lessons do you wish you would have learned earlier in your career? And as a new CEO in the last few years, what do you wish you would have known before you took over?
What I wish I would have known. Well, it's funny because I was on so many boards. I mean, I had sat on about 10 boards. And so I would tell all of my CEOs when I was in the investment role, I would say, being a CEO is a lonely job. Make sure you have someone to talk to. And I hold true to that today. And I don't just have one person to talk to. I have sort of, you know, groups of people that I trust and bring sort of challenging, you know, topics to. Because I don't think we can do it alone. I do think you need a great team around you. You need smart people who are willing to challenge you, right? If you believe your own, you know, own story sometimes, you're going to miss out. You're going to not see things coming at you.
So being on the investment side of things, what advice would you give somebody? A lot of times people don't realize as a CEO that part of your job, especially in a startup world, is raising funds. And talk a little bit about, from your perspective, sitting in both seats, what advice would you give?
It's so funny. You're always raising capital at a startup. You never stop. And I think it's, you know, recognizing that the seats around the table in the boardroom are also a source of future capital. And so we just did our Series D financing, and every single one of our investors dating back to our original A investors participated. And that kind of level of support is really important. And so you're always raising money. You're always, you know, looking for the support from your existing investors. They know you better than anybody else. And I think they also really come to the table when, you know, the diligence is happening. We had a new strategic lead for our Series D, which was Ascension Ventures, which is part of Ascension Health Systems.
Okay.
You know, super great investor. They opened up a lot of doors within their health system network for diligence purposes. But at the end of the day, having my existing investors talk about our traction, the team we're building, and really knowing us was super helpful.
So working with a board, you've been sitting in board seats for a number of years, and now you're working with a board as a CEO. What advice would you give somebody maybe working for with a board for the first time?
You know, it's funny. I look back on just even the trajectory at Cala. Early days at Cala, we had formed a board that had two of the founders on it, representatives from each of the lead investors. It was J&J and Lux Capital at the time. And we added a fifth seat, and the fifth seat was an independent board member. And to be honest, we actually didn't even fill that independent seat until after we closed our Series C round. And I think it was really smart of us to wait. And so we had the spot, we knew we wanted an independent member, but the choices we would have made back in 2015 were very different than the choices we were making as a, you know, moving into a commercial stage company. So in 2019, we appointed Stacy Exensang, my chairwoman of the board, incredible commercial background, incredible med tech leader, to help us in that new role. And so I just say, don't be in a big rush to kind of, you know, fill these board seats just with bodies. You'd rather have really, really high caliber, you know, team members around the table to take the company forward. And then importantly, as a company transitions to thinking about going towards an IPO or being a public company, you know, the pressure on the board is even greater to get the right kind of skill set around the table. I just went through a situation for one of the boards I'm on, NeuroPace. They went public in April of 2021. And we got a new head of the audit committee as part of that process. And then late last year, we added another very experienced neuromodulation, deep brain stimulation expert from a marketing perspective to our board. So really bringing in those kind of key skill sets, less investor-like or less venture investor-like and more strategic and experience level that was needed.
So what are common mistakes that you've seen over the years as a board member looking maybe new leaders that come in and what are some of the common mistakes that you think people should be aware of and to avoid?
You know, it's more case by case. I think the common challenge I have seen is people believing that their way is the right way and not kind of coming in and opening up your ears and listening to the people who have been at the job for the last, you know, several years. And I think that was also a little bit of why the board at Cala here chose me to step in is, you know, I raised my hand. I'm a first-time CEO. I'm here to do it the right way. And what was interesting about our technology is that we are a wearable and that we ship directly to a patient's home, even though we are a prescription device. And so while we call on the neurologist to generate the prescriptions, the patients are really directly in touch with us. And so we knew we had to do this a little differently than things like deep brain stimulation, which is a huge surgical procedure and very, very invasive. And so a belief that we could do it differently, that we could activate our patients through education and awareness, have them, you know, bring this to their physicians and say, hey, I'd like to try the Cala therapy. So I think it's a little bit of that, just being willingness to not believe it's, you got to do it the way the book is written and be open to input.
Talk a little bit about your product and also just some of the exciting trends that you think are on the horizon in the med tech, life sciences.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think, the experience I had at J&J and watching, if you think about like even in surgical robotics, right, there's incredible amount of data that can be leveraged to then improve outcomes, improve surgical procedures. And so in my mind, as I thought about joining Cala, it falls into this whole realm of data-driven therapies. I think we're moving away from an era where this instrument that a surgeon picks up is dumb and just does what it does, like a knife that cuts. But for a lot of the procedures where you're in, you know, important structures, or you're doing a new type of a surgical intervention, or even a new wearable type technology, having that data flow and the access to the data to more optimize for each patient becomes really, really interesting. And so that is kind of where I see the future of medtech. It's clearly Cala is, you know, squarely in the middle of that. We have an IoT connected device. We are able to measure tremor. We treat a condition called essential tremor, which is a hand tremor that is, as it progresses, it gets very debilitating. Patients can no longer feed themselves or dress themselves. And so our ability to restore that functionality to our patients is enormous. And so we are able to measure the tremor power before a dose is given. And then after a 40-minute stimulation session is given, that we can measure again. And so we know dose by dose tremor benefit from our technology, which is just incredible.
Yeah.
And that's really sort of what we're out in the market commercializing. So we were, we launched with three reps in the field. We actually stayed with three reps in the field through, all of 2020 and 2021 and, are just now, increasing the size of our sales force with our recent fundraising.
Okay. Well, you took on a CEO role at an interesting time in our history, going into COVID.
I do not wish it on anyone.
Yeah,
so tough.
Yeah, absolutely. So, any lessons you've learned through this this time, and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, COVID for Calla was a really interesting period of time. We had actually we have an on-site clinic, so we actually have patients coming into our office for clinical studies. And when the guidance came down, I think late February, that people over 65 should shelter at home, we stopped all of our in-clinic visits, and we called all our patients and said, we're going to support you remotely with your technology if you'd like to be supported, or you can just turn your device in and we'll end the study for you. And so we had a mix, but we as a company sheltered in place on that March 15th, March 16th date. Mm-hmm. And we, had, a series of board meetings, moved very quickly to tighten our budget and to reduce our expenditures. But then we realized one of the key things of our technology is we have a band that's replenished every 90 days. Mm-hmm. And so we had patients who had been purchasing our devices from September of 19 up until March of 2020 that we had to serve. So I had to call my employees back in during a pandemic. You're supposed to be sheltering in place. We issued letters to each of our employees to keep in their car that says, I work for an essential employer. If you have any questions, please call my CEO, Renee Ryan. And here's my phone number. And we were back in the office as of late April, early May, shipping product. We were actually enrolling clinical studies the first week of May, and we were doing it all remote. So We got back in the office before testing, before vaccines, before anything. And so the one thing I'm super proud of through all of COVID was when we had testing, we rolled it out. When we had vaccines, we encouraged people to get vaccinated. We never mandated it. But through all of COVID, we had five positive COVID tests through our entire company and zero transmissions. And so I stood up in front of my company and I said, it is my duty to keep my employees safe. And I have held to that for this entire 2-year period and made decisions about, one of my sales reps wanted to go to a conference. And I said, okay, well, this is during the Omicron spike. And I'm like, I'm going to say no, because that's not putting you in a safe position. And maybe I'm a little more conservative because we sit here in California and we were very conservative through COVID. But I think that the results speak for themselves. Zero transmission is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So every leader that I talk to enjoys learning and keeping up to date with trends and that. But any books that you have read that you recommend to other leaders?
Leadership books. Yes, I absolutely love Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. I laughed, I cried. It was just so real, and it was so real to know how, they were at the brink a couple times, that's a phenomenal book. Another book that has been my go-to for a lot of just good advice is Ben Horowitz, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Again, it's not up and to the right all the time. There are really hard days. And he talks very openly about some of those hard days in that book. And he also has rap quotes at the beginning of every chapter, which I totally dug. And then, I would say the one I'm kind of currently obsessed with is, Loon Shots by Safi Bahal. And what I love about that book is he talks about, innovation challenges and keeping the innovation alive as a company gets bigger. And we are currently at 92 employees. Safi calls out the magic number of 150, where the desire to innovate and the desire to, drive commercial and de-risk things kind of come into conflict at typically 150 people. And so we at Calla are very conscious of our need to continue to innovate. We have an enormous pipeline of therapeutic indications beyond the movement disorder space. We're working currently to expand our technology to Parkinson's patients. So we just have a lot to keep doing and keep innovating. And so I would say those are my three current businessy leadership books that are my go-tos.
Yeah, this is like our 140 something episode, and I don't think any of those have been mentioned. So that's
really
So I think,
oh my gosh,
you get an award.
Oh my gosh. Well, Shoe Dog, I literally I have so many copies of it because I'll go back to it and I'll reread it and I'll like be crying. I mean, there's parts of the book that are just so touching. And I remember I was laying at the beach and I had tears dropping onto my book.
Well, definitely some to add to our list. Favorite quotes, any that you refer to or?
It's actually one of my own. I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I do a lot of mentoring. I do a lot of sponsorship with people. I think the mentoring is me moving my lips. Sponsorship to me means I'm acting on behalf of somebody and pulling them along and giving them an opportunity. And what I tell all the people I mentor, a lot of them are women, to be honest. Sure. I say, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I think that goes back to the story I told you about my investment banking days, right? Get in front of the staffer, ask for the business, ask for the project, because if you don't ask, you know, you're not going to get. And what's the worst thing if you ask? They're going to say no. Doesn't hurt, right? Yeah. And so that to me is one where I push people a lot, especially women, to get in front of things and to ask.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Well, I love to cook. I love to just get outside. I mean, living in California, we have the benefit of being, you know, outside a lot. My husband and I like to do, this is going to sound odd, we like to do clay and trap shooting. So we'll go out to a range and do that and do a course, which is fun. You just, especially out here in California, where we go is in a valley. And so there's no cell signal and you are just off the grid with beautiful landscape around you. And you get a good hike in too. So it kind of serves a lot of purposes.
Okay. Any parting advice you would give to a new or up and coming leader?
I'm going to go back a little bit to COVID. And I think the demands on leadership have changed dramatically, right? If you go back to kind of, I'll think about like the early arc of my career, it was all about, you know, suit and tie and demanding respect and authority. And I think a lot of that is gone. And I love it because you can probably tell I'm a pretty transparent person. I think authenticity and transparency are super important. I also will give away my secret here. I tell people that my secret power is the ability to listen, because I think you actually learn more in the things that aren't said than are the things that are said. And knowing when those gaps, those pauses happen, oftentimes is where you need to go back and dig in a little bit more. And so, listen, I think we as leaders, you know, if we can take that message around authenticity and transparency to heart, I think that's what people want. And I think we need it as a society.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Renee, and I know this your insights are going to help our listeners, and wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.